This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Our guest today, Bill Mills, just celebrated his 93rd birthday in Modesto, California. He is originally from Wister, Oklahoma, but for 3 years in the 1940s, his home was the USS Curtis, a seaplane tender in the Pacific with a crew of roughly 1,200 men. Bill's job was in the boiler room way down below, so he never really interacted with the famous admirals who used the Curtis as a flagship from time to time. But he would experience plenty of excitement as the Curtis covered the Pacific to the tune of 7 battle stars. And we're going to get to a day that I know stands out in your memory, because that was the day your ship again, which had been hit on the first day of the war, your ship was hit again off of Okinawa in June of 45. But were there some days in those couple years before that, those 2 years you were on the ship before the kamikaze got you off of Okinawa, were there some close calls you remember or some things that stand out?
Oh, yeah. General quarters. Working in my battle station was the boiler room, and maybe I'd have a GQ and it's secure, and I'd go up topside, and half an hour later you're back down again. And that was day and night.
Even if you're not on shift, you could be up topside, you could be taking a nap, but general quarter sounds and you've got to head down there.
Oh, yeah. Which reminds me one thing. On the deck, they had that big mushroom, which was an air intake. Large.
Sure.
I was laying on top of that on off duty, I was laying on top of that with my legs hanging down. GQ sounded, and I jumped off running, and I didn't have any legs. I mean, they went to sleep, and I just flopped right out in the deck.
Oh, man.
I must have laid there working on my, rubbing my legs for 5 minutes before I could get up and walk.
Did anybody come by and wonder what was happening to you?
Oh, they were probably all too busy trying to get to their stations. So. I'll never forget that.
I don't know how you could. That must have hurt falling on your face, too.
It did.
And you can laugh about it now, but in those situations where general quarters sounded and you knew the enemy was in the area, was that tense? Was that nerve-wracking? Was that scary?
Well, you talk it serious. I mean, you got used to it, you know. That's another raid. Maybe they'll miss us again. So, But there was always, you know, they'd pick up bomber nearby. So most times, well, they were after the main fighting ships, you know. More than us in the back. So
you guys were not usually the main target, but
no.
You could get caught in it.
Right.
And how frequent was this? How frequent were these situations where enemy planes are in the area and you're hearing bombs go off and all the anti-aircraft fire and you're down there in the boiler room wondering what's going on?
Well, it depends. Sometimes, you know, some islands, well, we'd sit on there for 2 or 3 days, you know, and nothing. And then maybe all of a sudden, why, you'd have 2 or 3 planes. 2 or 3 bombers coming over. And of course, they didn't take a chance while you went to GQ and got ready for them. So.
Again, I want to get to the kamikaze deal, but any other memorable moments in those couple years until the kamikaze hit? Any funny things that happened or any trouble you got yourself into?
Oh, yeah. It's just routine, you know. That kind of gets to you after a while. That eat, sleep, and send your watch, and then sleep a little bit and do a little repair work.
Did you ever hear from home?
Yeah, I did. Not too often, but...
What was that like to hear your name called at mail call?
Oh, you look forward to that. Felt a little bit left out if you didn't have anything.
And was there something you would say that you missed the most about home when you're out there at sea for all that time? Did you ever get homesick for anything?
I don't remember especially getting homesick. A lot of the kids did, you know. Younger guys, they handled a little bit different, you know. I figured, well, it's going to end, so just do the best you can.
I'm sure you never had fried okra out there on the ship.
I didn't have any fried okra. I do remember one funny thing that happened when they had a supply ship come alongside, you know, where they'd organize a working party, you know, to carry the stuff in. So you had a lot of guys lined up, you know, right behind the other that knew where the storage was. So we had a lot of apples. We came by the hatch going down into the boiler room where I worked, and I decided, I'm going to get us some apples. I started down the ladder, and I got about halfway down. I looked up, and there was 2 more guys following me with apples. And I said, hey, get out of here. You're going to get me in trouble.
They were following your lead,
they
huh?
followed me because they're following the leader, you know.
Uh-huh. But you were taking a detour, and they took it with you.
Yeah, well, they didn't know the area, you know. So.
So how many apples did you end up with down there?
We just ended up with what I brought, yeah. Uh-huh. But I caught them in time. Otherwise, I'd have that boiler room full of apples. We had a hot plate and stuff down there, so we kept snack stuff, you know, where we could eat if we wanted to in our spare time. So.
Well, you could probably just set it next to that boiler for a second. It would heat up in a hurry.
It would, yeah.
All this time that you're out there, was there anything that ever gave you a real sense of the cost of war or how much this was a life and death situation? Were you ever confronted with the loss of other sailors or ships?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what kept you going, really, thinking about that. So,
did you see some other ships get hit?
No, I didn't.
Since you were down below.
Since
huh?
I was down below.
Yeah.
And primarily, the ones that were getting hit were a little ways away from us anyway, because we didn't want to risk the Admiral.
Sure. And before you guys were hit by a kamikaze on June 21st of 1945, were you aware of this kamikaze phenomenon? Had you heard about this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we were thinking about those all the time. We knew we were going into that area, too, and we went. So that was getting pretty close to Tokyo, or Japan, rather.
Well, and this is where kamikazes were the thickest and the most active was off of Okinawa.
Right.
So you guys know when you're headed that way that this is a possibility.
Yeah.
And again, you're not going to see it coming. You're not going to know what's going on.
No.
Well, tell me about it. June 21st, 1945. What do you remember about that day?
The main thing I remember, I guess, that we were in general quarters most of the time. You know, it might let up for just a short time and finally go up on the deck. Finally, I tuck a blanket down and just sleep on that diamond plate steel.
Uh-huh.
Rather than try to go back up the ladder and back down again. So, yeah, about 2 or 3 days there around that time where we were in general quarters most of the time.
So the days leading up to June 21st, you knew kamikazes were in the area.
Right.
And you're just pretty much on nonstop.
You're right.
So you must have been pretty tired. Must have been worn out.
Yeah, I made a note there one place that I kept a little ledger on it. But I made a note there one time I slept an hour and a half.
Let's see if I can read your writing. June 21, 1945, in port at 1842, that's 6:42 p.m., got hit.
I can't read it either. So.
Well, it hit by Japanese dive bomber, NGQ most of night, except for a few minutes at a time. Captain Peck was relieved by Captain Doan.
About two hours and something before...
2 hours and 42 minutes before the ship was hit.
Right. So he was off to a bad start.
So this was the captain of your ship?
Yeah. He had just changed captains just before we got hit.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot more to this story than what I just read, that at 6:42 p.m. you got hit by a Japanese dive bomber. Where were you when that happened?
I was in the engine room already because, like I say, we were at GQ most of the time, so I happened to be down there.
And what did that feel like down there when that plane hit?
Felt like the ship bounced off at the bottom and came back up like a cork or something, the way it felt. I knew we were hit.
Did it throw you off your feet?
Oh, yeah, it shook you up a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And then the ship started to list, naturally, you know. So as it would list, I'd pump water into our fuel, whichever, into another tank on the other side, and I'd level it off. And about the time you got it level, all the water would shift, and you'd go back the other way. So it was kind of nip and tuck for a while.
Yeah, and probably a lot of people wouldn't even consider it that that's how you deal with that situation. So you're in this boiler room, the ship's listing to one side, and if you don't do this right in moving the water around from tank to tank, your ship could sink.
Yeah, it just keeps listing, you know, if you don't pump water to a tank on the other side. So.
And had you ever practiced that before?
I hadn't had the occasion to do that.
How'd you know what to do?
I'm not sure. Somebody told me or I figured it out, one or the other.
Well, it's a good thing you did.
Yeah.
And is that just you doing that? Did you have some other guys helping you?
I had other guys down there, but I, you know, just one guy on the open valve. Well, I had someone to open the valve, you know, or close it.
And how long do you think you had to keep doing that before the ship straightened out?
Oh, it's been so long. It's been about 75 years, so. But it was quite a while. Then there was a seagoing tug came alongside and tied on, kind of propped us up, you know.
But those had to be some scary moments for you.
Well, they were scary.
Did you think you guys were going under?
No, I didn't think so. I mean, I didn't have time to think that we were or weren't.
Yeah.
I was just doing my job, you know, trying to figure out which way to pump that water.
And you had to go back and forth a few times, right? Because
right.
It was listing one
right.
way and then the other?
Right.
Yeah. That sounds tense enough to me.
Till we got the tug along, seagoing tug alongside, you know, and kind of stabilized us.
And was that night that the tug came along?
Yeah, but then within a few hours, the tug was there. It must have been close by. And there was another ship, too. They sent a crew aboard to weld a border plate over the hole where there's about a 5x8 gap in the hole, I think.
Well, this is what the Navy said a couple months later when they finally told everybody what happened to you. They said the seaplane tender USS Curtis's fighting power survived at almost maximum strength the crash of a Japanese suicide plane and its 1,000-pound bomb last June near Okinawa, although 35 men were killed and 21 wounded. The kamikaze's delayed action bomb rammed through to the center line of the Curtis before exploding immediately over a bomb stowage magazine, which miraculously escaped detonation.
That's the part that somebody is looking out for us.
I guess so. How is that possible?
I don't know. It don't sound possible to me.
So
but it happened.
Where this bomb went off was right next to bombs that you guys were carrying.
Yeah.
But somehow they didn't go off.
Somehow they didn't.
Whew.
Yeah, I think the good Lord was looking out for us.
Hard to argue with that.
Yeah.
Is that something you believed at the time? That you thought the good Lord would be looking out for you? Or is that just something you see in retrospect?
Yeah, it's just something I see in retrospect.
Uh-huh. So the bomb hits. Somehow it doesn't set off the bombs on your ship. But it does kill more than 35 men. I think later they said 37?
Yeah, something like that. Obviously, heard two or three different counts, but somewhere around 35.
Were there guys that you knew that were killed that day?
I didn't know them too well because it was out of the engineering department.
Uh-huh. If your ship had gone under, do you think there's any way you would have survived?
It's hard to know.
Given where you were. You're kind of trapped, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah, kind of trapped if it comes in above.
So you're in there in the boiler room, pumping it back and forth to keep the ship afloat. At what point did you realize the extent of the damage that had happened up above?
Oh, I didn't know for a while, you know, because I was still in general quarters. So it was later that they announced that we were secure, you know. So
then what did you have to do?
Stop shaking, I guess.
Well, I'm sure you had a job with relation to cleaning up the damage.
Oh, yeah.
Right? What'd you have to do?
Wasn't much damage in where I was in the boiler room.
Right.
It hit the sick bay and different area in the bomb storage, but it didn't really do any damage where I was except shake you up a little bit. So just a little cleanup, you know.
But I can't imagine that was an easy job.
No, it wasn't an easy job.
You probably saw things that you'd never seen before.
Oh, I did, yeah. So anyway, we survived. That's
yeah. But you probably saw a lot of guys who didn't survive. Like you probably saw what was left of them.
Right. Yeah, it's not a pretty sight. I guess that's why I filed these papers away in the closet and I didn't even think about that was another life, you know.
You really haven't talked about it these last 70 years?
Not too much, no. If somebody asks me, well, I'll tell them.
Did you tell your kids about it growing up?
Not very much till they were grown.
Well, this gives a little more description of it from this official Navy record. It says the Curtis was operating in the southern Ryukyu's Islands near Okinawa when the kamikaze struck at dusk of June 21, 1945. The Japanese plane took advantage of the gathering darkness and concealment of neighboring islands to approach within 800 yards before he was sighted by lookouts aboard the Curtis. The plane struck on the starboard side amidships at an estimated speed of 400 knots. The engine, part of the tail assembly, and the heavy bomb ripped through the skin of the ship, opening two gaping holes and exploding on the third deck. The terrific explosion wiped out the sick bay spaces, together with the warrant officer's mess room, staterooms, officer's galley, library, photo lab, barber shop, and post office. Choking smoke gushed from the damaged area, and flames licked through four decks above the point of the explosion. Fire mains and sprinkler systems in the blasted area were ruptured, and the firefighting crew brought emergency extinguishing equipment to bear. At this critical stage, however, the main propulsion engines were operative, and the Curtiss could have proceeded at moderate speed. Also, gun crews standing at general quarters stations against further air attack, and all guns operative except the forward 5-inch battery. With the fires out of control, there was imminent danger of the flames reaching the bomb stowage magazine, the upper ammunition handling rooms, and adjacent magazines. During this critical period, many acts of individual heroism were observed. When it became apparent that a great volume of water was needed to control fires in the Curtiss, two salvage vessels and two ocean tugs came alongside to assist. These small ships, under grave danger from threatened explosion of the Curtiss's magazine, remained alongside for more than an hour, pumping heavy streams of water onto the burning compartments. The Shackle sent a combat fire team aboard the Curtiss to cut their way with torches into a compartment in which a dangerous fire was burning. With flames under control, the ship's force turned to, with little rest, to clear away the debris and pump out flooded magazines and compartments. Then a service force repair crew came aboard to weld a boilerplate on the 5-by-8-foot gash in the hull. The ship was prepared to proceed. In reporting the action, the commanding officer credited the cool efficiency of the entire ship's company in the face of great danger with saving the ship and reducing casualties to a minimum. Sounds like a pretty big deal.
Yeah, it was a big deal to me.
Absolutely, because your life was at stake. It's time for another break. Don't forget you can find photos of Mr. Mills then and now at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, where you'll also see a video of Bill showing us the well-preserved pocket-sized log that he kept during World War II. If you flip to June 21st, 1945, you'll see his brief entry on that long and harrowing evening that came close to claiming his life as well as so many of his shipmates. We'll hear more of his memories from that, as well as his recent adventure on an honor flight to Washington, D.C., when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.